Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
The Treehouse, episode 61, Wagons Hole, with Danny Baker and me, Louise Pepper.
Thank you, Louise. And here we are then, everybody, gathered in this particular location for the last time. 61 shows, but number 62 will be bang on schedule, but in a different place, and I'll tell that about that in a minute. Welcome, everyone. Another 2 hours of fun for old and young, without the slightest hint of vulgarity, a good deed in this wicked world. And we intend to continue that with your help as we jump to hyperspace. But more of that in Stanta. Louise Pepper, Louise Napoleon Pepper. Pepper, the great granddaughter of Ho Chi Minh, is on the other side of town. And there's a certain crackle about this one because, as I say, show 61, Wagons Hole. And I won't hit it too hard, but we are going to try and make a go of this. Because I'm sure people think that we see all the whatever the adverts are. I must listen to them one day in these. That Louise and I then go home and bathe in ass's milk. But if we come out.
We got two bottles of beer each, didn't we?
We got two bottles of beer, and of average, and I'm not trying to break anyone's heart. The world is in a curious place, which is why hopefully this show exists and thrives. But if we've earned a tenner a show out of these, we've had a pretty good week, and I am not joking, but that's not the point. You know, people have been used to, but this is where we're going to have to try and gather our forces, and I've built this place we can go to, and it's got my new book and everything there, and I've been updating like crazy, and more on that as we go. But welcome, everyone, and I do hope you can, as they say, move forward with us, because it really is a huge, huge leap. But anyway, perhaps we can't keep talking, picking pockets here this early on in the show. What's that? Oh, of course, it's a Christmas carol, isn't it? No reason to pick a man's pocket every December the 25th.
Oh, have we done our first Christmas mention?
We made all the Christmas show, even if you don't join us
for anything. What are we? We're 4 months off. It's practically around the corner.
It doesn't matter. And all the new games are going to come in, and the old games, and the sausage sandwich and everything. And so this is just a gathering of the troops and the forces, and I do hope you can join us as we move forward from here. But here's the thing. One of the last of the great inventors, John Hampton, of New Orleans in 1841, he patented the Venetian blind. On August
good
the 21st.
Fellow.
Now, but here's the thing. Like so many people who patented it, that just means they legged it down the patent office first. Because Venetian blinds, perhaps, have been around in Europe since the 1700s. He did this in 1841. They've been around in Persia since 1100. The Persians, like everything else, they're way ahead.
It should be a Persian blind, then.
It should be. They're called La Parisiennes in France. Of course they are. By the way, Persia, which is, of course, Iran... Mm-hmm. When did you think that changeover came? Because Persia's a great name for a country, don't get me wrong.
Oh, yeah.
Persia has real music about it. That's the king and I and all of that. That's Siam. But another great name for a country, by the way. When do you think Persia turned into Iran?
1910.
35. You're not too bad. Not near 35. And it was the, and I'm not being, no inference here, but this is the truth. The Persian ambassador in Berlin in 1935... suggested this, and he put it forward, and they got the backing of the German government because they wanted Persia to cut ties with the British Empire. And they said, how about we go for the old name Iran, which has the same root as Aryan. And that's absolutely true. No, it is. You know, I just put that out there. Iran is at the same word root as Aryan, and they ran it by the Germans, and the Germans put their thumb up, said you should go for that. Anyway, but that brings us back to the Venetian blind. If in your house, Peps, the Venetian blinds, are they on, have you got a little pole you twist to open them, or have you got the strings?
Do you know what? We haven't got any in this house.
Haven't you? Oh, there's the stick in the
We did in my old flat. Mm-hmm. My parents have got, yes, the strings and then the stick to twiddle to open and close.
Because they're
strings to pull them up and then a wooden stick to twiddle them.
Well, this house is full of them. And then they're held, can I say they're held to clean?
Oh, they're awful to clean.
I'm just cupping my ear to the door to see if Wendy laughing like a drain. What would you know about that, she says. But I've heard, let me put it another way, I've heard they're hell to clean.
That's why we don't have any in this house, because I had them in my old flat.
Well, you've got to get one of those things the French maids in old comedy sketches had, one of those feather dusters, which you don't often see. My dog, Twizzle, the lunatic Twizzle, he used to launch himself at anyone who walked within half a mile radius of our house on the tours and stuff. The photographs and the stories of him were always well received. Twizzle, once we came home when we lived in Deptford, and he always threw himself at the front door, even when we came up to him, and a real boom. You think, well, and he'd be back up and boom again. He ruled Paul Gascoigne out of an England fixture. If you saw the shows, you know that's what Twizzle does. Anyway, and we'd open the door and say, that's your soppy old git, and he'd sort of back off. But one time he came home, no boom, nothing. I said, he's quiet. We went in, went out to where he, you know, his bowl or his you know, his basket was, nothing. Twizzle, where is he? We could not find him. We went into the front room, and there he was, 2 feet off the ground, tangled up in the Venetian blind.
No.
Yes, he was. He'd launched himself at it.
His feet I don't like them.
His feet had gone through, he was kind of spread-eagled, and his snout was through, facing us, but we couldn't see his eyes, and he was just hanging there. And I went up and opened two of the Venetian blinds with my thumb and forefinger, and he peered out at me, and I peered in at him. I said, what have you done? And for one of the few times in Twizzle's life, he looked bested, as if to say, we will never talk of this again. He must have launched himself at the Venetian blinds, started thrashing around, becoming more entangled as he thrashed, and he was half in, half out of the Venetian blind, 2 feet off the ground.
No, they're a menace. They're a menace.
John Hampton brought us these today. A couple of other things.
Naff off.
The adding machine today was... everyone enjoys an adding machine, especially if they've got the lever on the side of it, like a one-arm bandit. One-arm bandit? Do people say one-arm bandit anymore? There's nothing wrong in saying one-arm bandit, is there?
I don't think so.
What a weird thing to call a machine. A one-armed bandit. Yes, it took your money.
Is it because it takes your money off you?
Yeah, I guess so, but one-armed bandit. No, fruit machines are generics, isn't it? But by the way, the greatest sound effect we own here, and we use it sparingly, because I don't want it to wear out. I don't want the tape to wear out like a Mellotron. The absolute number one sound effect we have is an old, it's very satisfying, is an adding machine. Ladies and gentlemen, as a bonus, let's hear the adding machine sound effect. Superb. You see, that's why we only use it sparingly. It's such a beautiful thing. And when it starts coughing out the results at the end, you really feel technology has something going for it. What's the matter, Peps? You said, a minute ago.
Well, it reminded me, you know, I read out an email from a man who called splinters shivers.
Yes.
And it was an old word for splinters.
Yes.
And I've just looked up. It was Leighton who tweeted us saying it suddenly dawned on him that shiver me timbers.
Oh,
has an actual proper meaning, as in not shaky shivery, it's turning the timbers of the ship into splinters and pieces.
Isn't that something? Man, a lot. Did you just figure that out? Just look it
on. No, it was Leighton who tweeted us after the podcast saying,
shiver me timbers.
Mind blown, shiver me timbers.
I mean, again, it's probably in there with one-armed bandit, but shiver me timbers, yes, of course, brilliantly deduced. One last thing. By the way, I might save it for the next few shows, but I'm researching another Amazon reviews thing, and it's very, very good. But along the way, I found the chalk, C-H-O-R-K, which is chopsticks and fork all in one. It's at the end where the chopsticks sometimes have a, you know, where they're joined at the top. Mm-hmm. It's got a fork on it. And I don't know why this isn't, because I you know, not got nothing against them, but give me a knife and fork. As Jerry Seinfeld said, they must have seen the knife and fork by now. But we can get a chalk. And that was out there. But by the way, and we do start the show. There's no point me advertising the future when everyone says, you don't even get these shows started. Why on earth should we subscribe to it? We don't even get these shows started. And sadly, from here on in, if you want to, you know, email us and take part and all that, it is shifting somewhere. Well, yeah, we're going to charge rent. I can't help it. We've got to make a living. We've got to try and put this on a paying basis. But William Shepherd invented liquid soap in 1865. Now, liquid soap...
65? I thought that only came in about 1988.
Here, well, you're absolutely right. In 1865, he invented it, but there was no... How about this? I'm tempted to not give this huge piece of information until, the hayseeds at the door have put across their palms with silver. But this is the sort of thing. You're not going to get anywhere else. So William Shepherd invents it, and no one knows what to do with it. They use it in industry, but there's no way of selling it. It's too expensive to put in glass bottles.
Oh, of course.
And it wasn't until 1980, you were really right, when the Mini Tonka Company decided they're going to go forward with this, but they weren't very big, the Mini Tonka Company, as they were in Minnesota. But how about this, everyone? Whatever you're doing, listen to this. This is one of those brilliant marketing maneuvers in the history of commerce. The Mini Tonka Company thought, well, we were going to market it, but what's going to happen? All the big pharmaceuticals and all of that are going to bring out their own versions, and all the big stores are not going to take us. So this is absolutely true. Mini Tonka bought up the world's entire supply of pump dispensers. So only they had them. They bought every, this is true, every single pump dispenser in the world. It took 6 months for the world to replenish its pump dispensers again, by which time there was only one show in town, and that was the Mini Tonka hand soap. And it was branded, we are going to start the show. We're trying to give as much bang for your buck as we disappear into hyperspace. Not disappear, hopefully. It was marketed as soft soap. And you're talking about shiver me timbers. People used to say that, don't soft soap me.
Oh.
I don't know why. My nan always just said, oh, don't give me the old soft soap.
If I try to
go around there for a 2 shilling piece or an ice cream. Go on, you know, that's soft soap. You can take one. Soft soap. So there's your William Shepherd, and that's plenty, I think, for the opening of the programme. What are we doing today, Peps?
Number one, you have, in fact, written one song.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, something in your house people always ask about. Number three, what have you spilled and over what?
Got built.
Number four, the first thing you ever complained about. Number five, breakfast cereal disasters.
Breakfast cereal disasters. I threw that one in there right at the last minute yesterday, but we don't know where we're going to go with that. But there it is. That's the menu as we have it. Anything from the past 60-odd shows, please always go back to those subjects. What have you got over there, Peps?
Well, we've got Kate, who's made up her own. It was about...
That always happens. That's always... And bless you and bravo. Go on.
This is about... you. She says, this is from Kate. You were talking about on how to answer the phone. This is when hello replaced ahoy, you were saying last week.
Yes, last week, and we went around the world. We've done it many times over the years, seeing how different nations answer the phone.
Reminded me of an incident with my dad. She puts brackets, he of the elephant sighting from a plane in Somerset.
Yes, I don't think we've done that yet, but I've got it right here.
Okay.
Right here.
I was going to say, I'm sure I'd remember that.
You know what, Peps, and it's the last time I'm going to mention it. If nobody follows us across to the Patreon site, doesn't matter. We've got such a backlog of emails, we'll just read them to each other. And that'll be plenty of fun. We've got such a backlog. I'll do the elephant today. Continue.
As Pep said, we used to answer the phone with our phone number. My dad was self-employed, and as such, we had two phone lines, one private and one for his business. This was rather unusual in the early 80s. And of course, all phone numbers in the village started with the same three digits, so 456. Hmm. To differentiate, we had a dial phone for one, and a trim phone for the other. One evening, my dad was calling his mate to arrange a swift half. Using his business line, as soon as he called them, the private line started to ring. As no one was home, Dad answered the private line, 456-477, hello. But no sooner than he did that, than his friend answered the other line. So he put the business line to one ear, and then the mystery one to the other. Hang on a minute, Barry, I've got someone on the other line. Hello, hello, nothing. Barry, sorry, I'll be a minute. I can't get anything out of this other fella. Hello, hello. Thankfully, my mum walked in after he'd been doing this for 5 minutes, unsure why nobody was talking to him. Yes, Barry's number was very similar, and Dad had actually dialed our own private landline and had spent 5 minutes talking to himself.
See, that's easily done. That's easily done. When I used to be the receptionist at the New Musical Express, I used to have tremendous fun connecting people to themselves, or certainly much more fun connecting just people up randomly to each other in the office. You'd say, Charlie Murray would be sitting there, Charlie, call for you. Nick Kent would be there, Nick, call for you. And I'd connect them both. And they would go, hello, 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 hello. What do you want? What do you want? Oh, it's Dan again. You know, they're trying to do 5,000 words on Brian Wilson here. This is a tremendous email from Richard, and it's a boast, and it continues the always fascinating subject of giraffes. Now, when I said, what can you tell us about giraffes? I said, if we only get three, then that's plenty, and that's the idea of all the subjects. But Richard gives us, how about this, though, for a career change? He says, about 40 years ago, I worked as an animal keeper in the Longleat Safari Park. Now, I don't know what he does now, but how do you follow that up? I used to work at Longleat. He says here, in the East Africa section, where there was a variety of animals, zebras, camels, elephants, and giraffes. Now, your giraffe, he says, height notwithstanding, is a very aloof creature and sees anything beneath them as, well, beneath them, to the point that they will literally walk right over you if you don't get out the way. Despite this sense of superiority, they share a digestive system similar to a cow's. I don't know why that should disqualify them from being superior, but bless you. Despite this sense of superiority, they share a digestive system similar to a cow's and find it necessary to regurgitate the food once they've chewed the cud. Now, this is no problem in a lesser animal, but when your neck is 8 foot long, there's a very long way for a mouthful of cud to travel each time on its way to and from each stomach. You know, we've got a second brain in our stomach. You know that, Peps. I've told you 6 times or not. Probably. Look at your face. I've never told you that, have I? We really, really do. We really do. I know it sounds like, well, I'm sure I've heard of that, but when this is all over, have a look online. We really do have a second brain in our stomach. It never gets any of the PR the real brain gets, but the second brain in our stomach. Anyway, Richard's telling us about the digestive system of the giraffe here. As a consequence, our giraffes have found it useful when eating to lean their necks on top of fences, branches, or rails as a way of aiding digestion and regurgitation. That's a lovely image, isn't it? They eat and then lay their head down. What else?
I've felt like that before now.
So, Harold was our largest giraffe at just over 18 feet tall, and he weighed 1.75 tons, about the same weight as your family car. One day, I was filling Harold's hay rack whilst he was in his pen. My platform was about 12 feet from the ground, and I had my back to him while I was busy loading his rack with food. Having already had a few mouthfuls, he suddenly leaned in and squashed my head between his not inconsiderable neck and the metal hay rack, purely so he could aid his digestion, get it down the hatch. This intense pressure lasted for a few seconds, long enough for the ball of cud to travel the length of his neck before I was released. I feel I am alone in the treehouse listenership to have had an 18-foot, 1.75-ton giraffe on my head. Now, and he says, by the way, while I'm here, and as we all know, all your subjects are permanently open, yes, they are, or open to interpretation, many months ago, you had a topic, my family is the worst at keeping secrets. Well, I'm going to put a marker down and say that my family is the best at keeping secrets. 40 years. Both sides kept the same secret from each other, thinking the other did not know. It is not a tragedy. This is not a terrible family secret, but the tale of the loss of a family teddy bear. Let me know if you want this story.
Oh,
now,
what?
Listen, Pep, nothing could be more of a trailer for our future venture than that. Yes, Richard, we want the story, but it's obviously not for everyone. You've got to join us over the other side. How about that? A secret 40 years that divided a family about a teddy bear.
Oh,
that makes me want to sign up, and I'm doing the racket. What you got over there, Peps?
This is from Joe Jagger, appropriately. I have written one song. I wrote it when I was 7 with my older brother on a baby keyboard, and the lyrics are, if Joan of Arc had a radio, would she listen? Okay, I bet she would, if she thought she could. but she lives too far away.
That is brilliant.
I can still play it to this day, says Joe.
Well, please do. Send us a little
MP3.
Again, we're building up stock here. We're on easy street now, Peps. For the last 61 shows, we've got our feet to the fire. Not now. People are rolling up, filling. That's well, Morrissey. Didn't Morrissey write something like that?
I was going to say, isn't it? And
Joan of Arc. And her headphones melted in
the flame. Yes, maybe that was the inspiration.
I think our friend was
first. It's the answer song.
Speaking of which, Jane is in touch, and this is the subject of There's Something in Your House Everybody Asks About. Mm. And Jane says, we own Spike Milligan's old upright piano. When people find out it's his, they have to play a few notes on it. Yes, you would.
Yes.
I don't know if that's Jane, his daughter, Jane Milligan, but Spike's old piano. Oh, I'd lift that lid. Not the actual keys one, you know, the one at the top where you can see all the strings laid out. That's a lot of fun, lifting the top of a piano and running your fingers along them, isn't it? Like a harp. But I would stick my... What? You've never done that?
I keep telling you, my granddad burnt my mum's piano for firewood, so we've never had one.
Well, the next time you pass one, you're in the BBC still. I said that with some venom. But lift, they've got pianos all over the place, you know. Mm. You've helped pay for them, so you're entitled. Lift the top bit up where they have all the strings and that, and just take a whiff. It's a beautiful smell of an old museum. Ooh. And in that case, Spike Milligan. One more quick one.
Well, funny you used to say that. The only piano I have ever sniffed was the grand piano we had in the big hall at school. Mm. Our one smelt of curry.
Did it?
Because of a prank.
Oh.
Some of the girls played on the music master.
Yeah.
Was they put a load of curry powder in it.
Did they?
So that when he used to get angry, he used to slam the lid of the grand piano down. Scarf. Hmm. So they put curry powder in it. So when he did, in a tantrum at the girls were misbehaving, a plume of
that
curry powder smoke came out. But fable had it happened sort of 10, 15 years before we joined the school, but still it smelt of curry.
A piano smelling of curry powder. That's right up there with a pith helmet full of saveloys. I should jot that down. If anyone else on the dread subject, if you've never heard the show before, this is the core. This is like the little aniseed that used to be at the centre of a gobstopper. If you've ever smelled a piano or a musical instrument, the smelling musical instruments is a huge subject, and I hope it'll see us through the next 6 months. This is from our friend Alice. This is dogs given half the chance on what they'll steal and that when they become burglars. And Alice says, I've got a story about my dog, Basil. He's a boxer. Many years ago, when Basil was just a young dog, we had a party at our house. Things were going well. The buffet was popular, as were the drinks. And the dog was hanging around and enjoying himself and everyone making a fuss of him. About 6 months later, I was in bed with my husband when we heard the dog come running up from the garden, up the stairs and jumped on the bed between us, as he normally did to say good morning. But he seemed unusually excited this day, and he dropped something between us for us to marvel at. We thought it was a toy or a ball, but on further inspection, it seemed to be a lump of coal. Intrigued at this, my husband started gingerly pulling it apart, and then shouted, oh, it's not coal. Oh, God, it's a pork pie. It's a bloody pork pie. Sure enough, you could just about tell it was a fully intact but black and carbonized whole pork pie. I couldn't remember the last time we'd had pork pies. Searching our memories, we remembered the buffet 6 months before. Surely not. We asked Basil to show us what was going on, and he was thrilled to take us into the garden, where he led us to a freshly dug hole. The hole was lined quite well with preserved slices of pizza, some paper plates, more pies, and a lot of plastic forks. Basically, the whole buffet had been stolen from the party, and Basil had put into his hole in the ground. I'm not sure why he wanted to keep it all for so long, and why that particular morning thought, the buffet I buried will just about be done now. He seemed furious when we disposed of his treasure, and he never stole anything again. Now, Basil died a few years ago, but still now, if we see anything that even looks like a lump of coal, we'll shout to each other, God, it's a bloody pork pie. That's from Alice. Bless you, Alice. That's a tremendous story.
Samuel Pepys and his cheese.
It is. Yes, he's huge Parmesan. Now, we're going to take a little break, and we'll be back. You know what I was going to do, and this is mean, and I know it seems one note today, but I was going to say, now, if you want to hear the second part of the show, you pick it up on the other thing, you know, and halfway tempt you to now. Because it, I know in these straitened times, but don't be mar and parsimonious. We're knocking ourselves out here, and it's not just the shows. Over at the Patreon thing, I'm doing all my writings, and those are, if you've ever seen the stage shows, you know I don't do short shrift. So there's plenty over there. But in the meantime, here's some messages, and we'll be right back.
Good morning, everybody. It's the Danny Baker Show, radiating out across the airwaves. Come the sunshine or the rain, come aboard the Danny train. We'll kick our slippers off and throw our cares away. What better thing to do than have a jolly jape or two? Don't touch that dial, there's nowhere else to go. Come and join a happy session, wave ta-ta to the recession on the Danny Baker Show.
Take it away, Danny.
And we're back again. Thank you very much, everybody, for sticking with us. There's much to discuss, and already the pile of emails in front of me. Oh, one of the things we were doing, Peps, I threw this out there. I'd had a couple of drinks. So what? Sometimes it inspires me. But I've been following this story about, you know, the whole astrological chart has changed now. And there's this
An extra star sign. Yeah,
there's extra star sign, and all of this shuffles around, and everyone's having a lot of fun with it. But it's something we did a long time ago on the radio. Come up with an alternative zodiac because why not? And so I did ask people to do some of those. And we've had, I suggested, that, and it was actually a listener who gave it, was last time around, that at the sign of the crossed xylophone sticks, you have the Patrick Moore sign, right? It was going to replace Libra. It was just going to be the sticks of the xylophone, and it was just called the Patrick Moore. So we are asking you to do those, and in future shows, I will bring it down to the 12. And don't forget, you will own your own star sign and all the rites, ceremony and privileges that come with that. We've already had a few suggestions from them, but it's actually today, as I speak, Peps, it's Princess Margaret's birthday. And as you know, again, I always assume you take any notice of what I'm saying, and don't forget at the moment the show's over. But it was Princess Margaret's birthday that gave us the Daily Horoscope newspapers.
Yes, you're right.
The Daily Express asked one of their people, the old astrology that they used to like years ago, make it up and say what's in store for the baby, Princess Margaret. They put it in the Daily Express in 1930. And it was such a success, the editor said, keep that up. And that was the birth of horoscopes in newspapers. Nothing more or less than a hack was assigned to come up with some old guff to celebrate Princess Margaret's birthday. So the heavens are with us on this. But if you want to suggest a sign, and you don't have to be satirical or clever about it, just give us a sign that you think would sit nicely. And on the website, I will once a month say what the future holds for you in our new zodiac. Give us something from over there, Peps.
This is it's quite a long one from Ian. This is something in your house people always ask about, or rather don't. This isn't just a single thing, but a new one every year, not just for us, but the house next door. When we moved into our home 10 years ago, we met our neighbours socially and we hit it off and soon became great friends and would buy each other a small gift at Christmas. Then we had an idea after some drink was taken that we would each buy a gift that must remain on display in the living room for the full next 12 months. Nothing outright vulgar or upsetting, but you can go tasteless with a limit of £15. The first year wasn't a huge success. We bought them a 2-foot-high ceramic cockerel that we were sure would draw maximum attention. But following some mix-up in the understanding of the arrangement, they brought us a very tasteful, attractive wooden box for playing cards. However, recognising the error in their memory, they vowed to do better next year. So the following Christmas, we received a huge, brightly coloured, pirate-shipped teapot. Game was on. Over the next few years, we put more effort into them, but one of our best was we gave them a gift of a photo frame. It proudly spelt out the word friends in large letters with a large central picture surrounded by 5 smaller ones. Always focusing on the fact that people who knew both us and people who didn't know us would see the pictures, we thought the picture selection was very important. Then my son had a great idea. Rather than a collection of regular photos, let's pretend they were photos of us that had been taken without our knowledge.
Uh-oh.
Or their knowledge. So during the whole summer, we would pop into their garden front and back and take pictures of ourselves as if they had taken them without us knowing. We did dodgy acting, like looking over my shoulder as if I've heard a noise and unlocking the front door. They loved it, and such was the reaction of those who knew us all that they moved it into the hall. I should mention, he works as a psychologist. They positioned the frame next to the front door, so as people left their house, it was impossible to miss. From the plumber and decorators to double glazing folk and distant relatives, all must have seen those strange pictures during 12 months, but we are told not a single person ever asked or said a word, but did leave quite often with a puzzled look.
That's a tremendous, tremendously Ian complicated. And of course, there's a psychologist involved. Absolute beautiful story. Who's that from?
Ian.
Thank you very much indeed, Ian. So here's a... by the way, do you ever have them? They were popular for a bit. You know the frames you can put your picture... thing in it, and it changes the pictures for it, reads them off a camera card.
Yes.
One has them. Then persevere with it. We've had about five of them. They were pretty fluid.
The worst experience of one of those was my brother had one on his mantelpiece. Beautiful pictures of the children, until it worked round to the post-operative pictures of an op he had.
Did it?
Yes.
Those are sort of gaps gathering.
Oh, and we all went,
No. That's the thing. Those cards are thousands and thousands of folders, didn't they? Well, we had them, and eventually they got back in the drawer. I think charity shops are full of them these
days.
By the way, new subject for next time. Don't talk to me about photographs. Let's see what we get for that. Don't talk to me about photographs. We'll have that. This is from our friend Steve, and this is Spillages. Spillages, of course, spillages. A number of years ago, my wife and I stopped at the Asterix Park near Paris, where we were meeting up with our daughter, who had been there as part of a school trip. The plan was we'd collect her there and drive south for our family holiday, saving her the long trip home to Scotland on the bus with all of her fellow mates. We arrived early and the children were still in the park. The bus driver kindly invited us to join him on the bus while we waited. The bus was beautifully appointed, dark green leather, which was normally used to transport the Celtic football team to away matches. How about that? We were offered coffee and I gladly filled a large polystyrene cup. I asked for milk and was pointed towards the front of the bus. Still wearing my sunglasses, I stepped towards the front but didn't notice there was a step down. I lunged forward and threw the entire contents of the steaming black toffee over the inside of the windscreen. But worse, the driver had all his paperwork, passenger lists, etc., neatly laid out on the flat area below the windscreen, and the tsunami of boiling hot coffee poured right through them. With a scream, the driver leapt forward past me and frantically tried to gather them up and shake off the swirling torrents of liquid. Of course, at this point, our daughter arrives back with her classmates, who all stood there stunned, watching this driver swearing up a storm, trying to retrieve what he could. In the uproar, my wife, daughter and I quickly tiptoed to the exit, gathered up her bags and headed straight for our car. We did not look back. Thank you very much, Steve. Bravo. But we used to have a coach driver on the Millwall away trips when we were in 88, 89 and 90 when Millwall were briefly in the top flight. And it was all good fun and hijinks. But our driver, I won't even mention his name, but... he was out of your part of the world, perhaps. We live now, but he was a, he was very, very amenable, because when you've got a coach full of Millwall supporters, pubs sometimes are loath to say, "Yes, boys, come in and have a drink." And you know, my old man, I used to tell this, my old man, who was obviously 20 odd, 30 odd years, most older than most of the other people on the coach, yet truth be told, was the most notorious one who'd been thrown out of many football grounds for a while, perhaps. We used to stop in car parks of pubs, and because my dad, he always wore a tie and a jumper, even in his later life, mainly in his later life, and would say, "Dad, you go in and say, look, we're about a load of Millwall supporters, we don't know, because it had signs outside, no football coaches." So he would go in and it'd come out.
Respectable face.
Yeah, the respect, little did they know. So my old man used to do this, and it would take about five or six stops before a pub would say, "Okay." But he would do it every one. And he would always be in there a few minutes, you see. And he would come out and say, no chance. And people said, "What's he talking about in there?" I said, "We probably can't get the attention of the governor and that." It was only when my mate Steve Sheehan pointed out, he said, "He's always wiping the corners of his mouth when he comes out. Watch." And he would come out and go, No, I don't want it in there. He'd had a brandy or a Guinness, and everyone, when we sat on the coach, I don't think he even asked. I don't think he even used to ask my old man. He said, well, you can't go to a pub and not have a drink. I said, but what, we're all sitting outside, Dad. We're all sitting, you've only got to ask. Oh, you've got more chance if you buy a drink, he's going to let you in. But anyway, so our coach driver, he was the worst for it. Once we did get into a pub, he wouldn't come out. He'd stand on the one-armed bandit, as was, and he'd have a pint on top of it. This is terrible, I know. And would also, let's call him Larry. He wasn't called Larry. And he's like, make a move, mate. We're going to miss the kick. Go on, hang on 1 minute. I've got two bells here. I'm going to hold, another drink. And coming home, he was murder. We said, Larry, any chance, mate? Or we're going to drive ourselves. One more. Go on, one more. Go sit down. We'll be only half hour out. I know. It's a different era and all of that. So not only was it a coachload of Millwall supporters, but the driver used to like a drink. Now, that is terrible, I know. But he used to have a kip during the game. He wasn't interested in football at all. So he would have a kip during the game. So I'm all right now. I'm all right. Lovely. all I'm doing is bringing us an oral history. You read that again, I'm sorry, but if you read the diaries, they are full of stories like this. I've been writing thousands and thousands and thousands of words. Because I started on two tours this year. One on my own. You know, in a tanner, so I'm pouring it all into that. Give us something over there, Peps.
Well, this is from Michael. Mad things in the middle of nowhere. He said, last week, one of your emails mentioned that they were the only patrons at a place called Bedrock, home of the Flintstones,
Somewhere
in the desert on the way to the Grand Canyon. We have since found out that it has closed down.
It has, only recently, though, yeah.
But he says, I can beat that at the same place. Me and a couple of mates were driving around America in 1979, and we came across Bedrock and pulled in. Ours, again, was the only car in the car park, and off we went to see if anything was going on. We tried every door and every entrance, knocking, banging, shouting. It wasn't the bank holiday or a Sunday. It was the middle of August. The place was like the Marie Celeste. We were a bit disappointed. The only memory we could take away was a photo of two of us taken with an Instamatic camera. How the place was still open 34 years later, I have no words.
Well, it is sadly, yes, it did. It looks all right in all the photographs.
Yeah.
And I've got to say, if someone said there's a Flintstones theme park over there, yeah, even better there's no one in it. Even better. Here's a couple of suggestions for the star signs. This is from Jonathan. He says, further to your discussions about a giraffe recently, though the giraffe itself would not be a satisfactory or indeed a clever symbol for a star sign, they are too tall for a horizontal box. That means a fellow creature always struck me as slightly exotic and mystical, the okapi. Now, the okapi shares many properties with Brer Giraffe and is also called the zebra giraffe or sometimes the forest giraffe. I am currently a Virgo. I'm always a bit awkward with that one. And if you can grant me mid-September this new sign, I, for one, will proudly announce I am an okapi. Now, that's on the list. I know, it's not bad, is it? We've got the okapi
like
and the Patrick Moore. The final decision won't be made for a couple of weeks yet. And Neil from Barrington gets in touch, said, how about the Tommy Cooper? Now, Neil, come on. We've got to have some credibility in the astrology. They're nothing else if not copper-bottomed. The sign of the Fez. Mothers around the world will be praying for their child to be born under that sign, as obviously the birth will be just like that. And I know. But the Fez ain't a bad sign, particularly for me. But I'm going to disqualify that, Neil, because it's too larkish. And that's a rotten thing to do. It's too larkish, I think. Something from there, Peps. What do you got?
This is from Mark in Leicester. This is a tale of me going skiing, and I think it fits in with living out a comedy film in real life. Back when I was 12, me and my high school had a skiing trip to Austria, a glorious week in the mountains, and we were all pretty much beginners, with naturally some better than others. After a couple of days of me struggling to grasp it, our infuriated instructor decided the best hope for me was to tie me to her to help me keep up. What could possibly go wrong? Well, it was an improvement at first, but then once we were skiing, I was distracted and didn't notice she had stopped. And of course, I was attached to her and had nowhere to go in the ensuing seconds. Crash! Down we all went. No injuries, but a slightly bruised ego, but I did improve by the end of the week. So much so, I was convinced I was a shoo-in for Most Improved Award. I was also psyched up to accept it, but it went to someone else. A Cruel World.
That is something you only see in films. One goes down, the other go down. And usually, if a pumpkin comes off a store and rolls down the street, people will be handily arranged like Skittles, and they all go down as the pumpkin hits them. But I don't believe anyone has ever seen that. I'm looking at, as we approach the end of this show, just some of the vast amount of emails unread. They'll all get done. I've got elephant here, car keys, bumper car. What's result? Result with an exclamation mark. Let me just take that. I can't even remember what this one is. Result. Oh, this is from Glyn. Many years ago, me and a mate were walking over the moorland north of Rochdale. We were the only people from... Oh, I know what this is. This is things in the middle of nowhere.
Ooh, yeah.
Many years ago, me and a mate were walking over the moorland north of Rochdale. We were the only people for miles. We decided to take a shortcut between two paths down a steep hill. And there, on the grass, literally in the middle of nowhere, were two unopened cans of Stella and a pouch of Golden Virginia. Result! You know, some fella, some wildlife expert, some bird watcher, some twitcher, takes 30 seconds to go behind a tree and have his ease, comes back, where do I leave there? Where'd they go? There's an equal other side to that story, I know. I've got the job interview vending machine, Brian Salad, not buying a house. One's just called Thunderbirds here, phone manner. Sad first words, hit by a vulture's head, gerbil attack, Belgians, all these headlines, another bus queue soaking, headlines on unread emails that we will get round to. I don't know what Tinder date is, but that seems quite promising. Just this one from Matt, and just a short one after that, if you like. This is lovely. This is... I remember reading this earlier on today and thinking, that's beautiful. You would think that a law-abiding police drugs dog would know right from wrong, he begins. But Asti was a law unto herself. She was an unbelievable drugs dog, don't get me wrong. Her first search as a pup after training, she found 30 grand worth of coke. And then, in one of her last searches 11 years later, she located 80 grand worth. In the years between, she located guns and cash and loads more drugs. But she got me into a load of trouble as well. For example, we'd been deployed on a drugs warrant with numerous officers waiting on me and Asti to do our thing in a large downstairs room with a mini bar in it. Asti put her nose in the air and she was off. Then she ran behind the mini bar. Aha, I thought. There was a silence followed by the sound of Asti eating something. I looked over and could see her head inside a box. She looked round, and she had cream on her nose. Opening the box, I found inside a birthday cake with a spaniel-sized snout trench running through the middle. It transpired to be a 21st birthday cake made by a very exclusive bakery and cost about £300. Our sergeant had to pay full whack to replace this cake. We never did find any drugs. On another time, Asti ate an enormous ball of wool and had to have surgery to get it all out again. That cost another fortune. But she was a wonderful, clever dog, and nobody was ever angry with her. Isn't that beautiful?
Oh.
Drugs here, all I'm saying is, if you've got, what was it, 80 grand worth of coke in your house, always have a birthday cake behind the settee, and the police dog will go straight for it. I think that's the lesson to be drawn from that. But something from you, Peps.
Well, we'll stay with pets. It's another stealing pet. It's Richard in Herne Bay. We've had a number of cats over the years, but it's our black cat called William that sticks in the memory. Unfortunately, he used up his 9 lives rather too quickly, but he proved to be a cat with very light fingers. Amongst his haul of swag was a koi carp, dead, a child's cuddly toy, a bread roll, another koi carp, alive, which we managed to get into a bucket of water to a friend's pond where it led a long and happy life.
Oh.
But his best and most audacious heist was to bring home a frozen pack of bacon that had no doubt been defrosting in someone's kitchen. We often wonder about the poor person looking forward to their bacon sandwich who returned to find it gone.
It's the same bloke who had his Stella on the path with his yes. tobacco next to it. He now thinks he's being targeted. We're virtually done, but one thing I meant to say earlier on when we were dealing about nicknames, remember last week we've been saying a nickname you're stuck with? I've got a friend who's, to this day, I've mentioned once or twice, it's called She Gave Me Water. And I know that is about as bizarre a nickname, She Gave Me Water, because when we were all much younger, between sort of 15 and 18, he's got to face facts here. He's not a traditionally good looking man, and he certainly wasn't a very good looking teenager. And whenever he used to try his luck with girls in bars, and he did, he was always knocked back. But as he walked over to sort of say, "Can I buy you a drink?" we were reminded of Quasimodo in The Hunchback of Notre Dame, when he thinks lovingly about Esmeralda, who was kind to him, and he looks towards the heavens and he remembers her, and he just goes, "She gave me water." Because she does. When they're whipping him, she gives him a little drop of water. "She gave me water." And as our mate would walk towards this girl, we always go, "She gave me water." I've got to say, occasionally he's still called that. "Oh, she gave me water." Because, yeah, and he'd come back being knocked back by whatever girl it was. And we would all say to him, "Did she give you any water?" "Shut up. She gave me water." Well, that's us for this particular tranche of shows. But we're bang with you again next Wednesday and next Saturday, but in a new location. It's over at Patreon. You can search my name over at the Patreon site, and it should come up there. And I promise you, I'm not trying to shortchange or do anyone out of anything. Peps will be there. Louise Napoleon Pepper, the great-granddaughter of Ho Chi Minh.
Thank you.
Because I'm adding to it every day. If you ever like the books and the tours and all of that, it's all going to be gathered under one roof for the first time ever. But hopefully we can make a go of it, just us and the rest of the Treehouse. Play the music if you would, Phil.
1, 2, 3, 4. Treehouse! Climb up, come in, let's cozy down. Wave goodbye to that silly frown as we chase our cares away. In the treehouse, the fire's on, it's warm inside. We guarantee you'll be satisfied as we laugh the day away. In the treehouse.
Take it away, Danny! That has been Louise Pepper on the other side of the table. The subject will come up the same as always on my Twitter feed. Phil Wilding is making the move with us, and I sincerely hope that you can too, because we do, no matter what else is happening in the world, do try to look up, not down, and so it will continue. The subjects will come out the same way. I hope your responses will be the same way, and I hope you can join us. Thank you very much indeed, everyone. I'll see you on the grand new venture, because it's always chiefly yourselves.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.